everything isn't fair. But in war, you act as if you can do what you need to do to survive. Because if you don't behave that way, you'll be killed. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Long Story Short.
And I'll be your host, Liwa.
Today we tell the story of Biafra, what led to its formation, the Nigerian Civil War, and its repercussion.
So,
grab your coffee and take a seat.
Cause it's story time.
Our story today begins in 1966. But before we get to 1966, let us take a background knowledge so that we know what we are dealing with and to properly follow through our story. When Nigeria gained independence from Great Britain in 1960, the young nation consisted of many tribes, but three major tribes occupied three distinctive regions. The Hausa tribe to the north, the Yoruba to the west, and finally the Igbo to the east. At the end of colonial rule, Nigeria had established self-governance with a federal government controlling all these regions, and they faced the same problems that most African new states who had also just gained independence faced as a result of borders that had been drawn without consideration of the people in different regions and their cultures. People with similar cultures were separated, and others with different or even opposing cultures found themselves within a singular political boundary. Well, this proved to be a recipe for disaster, especially in regions where the cultural integration had not spread. If you will, fast forward to 1966. In 1966, some officers led by Major Chukwuma Kaduna Nzeogwu successfully carried out a coup which removed the then Prime Minister Tafawa Balewa from office. Their excuse for the coup was that the politicians were milking the resources of the nation at the detriment of the common people. However, they forgot to tie up a loose end which made Major General Aguirre-Ironsi the new head of state, being the most senior military officer at that time. The repercussion of this coup was felt by many Igbos because Kaduna Nzeogwu was Igbo by extraction, and it was felt around the country, especially in the northern region. Ethnic uprising and communal violence against the Igbo people grew in the north, with the violence not curbed and the federal government's nonchalant attitude in addressing it. The Igbos in the north returned to the east, where they felt they would be protected among their own tribesmen. With this, the Igbo people of the East declared independence from Nigeria on May 30, 1967, giving birth to the nation of Biafra, or Republic of Biafra. The name Biafra was coined from two Igbo words, Bia, which means come, and Fra, which means leave. In other words, Biafra was created for the Igbos to come and leave or be free from prejudices. Now, there's one thing to note. The Igbos had an advantage over other tribes in the country. During the missionary period, they got more immersed in the Western culture, more than the other tribes. As a result of more schools and missions, they produced more qualified civil servants and teachers that were spread out in the entire country after the British exit. The Hausa of the North were not particularly happy about this. They felt that they had lost their jobs to the Igbo. It is said that about 10,000 to 25,000 Igbos had been killed from the violence by the time they had decided to secede from Nigeria. As a result of these, Lieutenant Colonel Odemegwu Ojukwu, with consultation from a council, declared Biafra an independent nation. The Nigerian government led by Yakubu Gowon failed to recognize Biafran independence and insisted that Biafra was part of federal Nigeria. By this time, many of the Igbo people fled from all over the country to the east, that is, the independent Biafra nation. and non-Igbos were expelled from the Biafran region. In order to avoid a full-blown war stemming from the differences between the North and the Eastern region, Ghana's head of state, who was also a military ruler, invited the contending parties to a meeting in Aburi, Ghana, where the Aburi Accord was formulated to make Nigeria a confederation of states. However, both sides interpreted the accord differently, and the war ensued. With an ambitious general and a motivated people, the Igbo started training an army without enough weapons. At this point, the young, the old, women, and even men were all ready to fight for their newly found nation. They had been convinced that if they didn't make their own, they would all be massacred by their haters, that is, the North and its supporters. In the beginning of the war, the Biafran army made some serious strides and consolidated its area, most notably the capture of Benin from the Nigerian forces, before they were made to retreat at Ore by the larger, better trained and sufficiently equipped Nigerian army, which became dominant in the later days of the war. Now, at the time of declaring independence, the new nation had access to seaports and substantial resources. But as the civil war ensued, the Nigerian army pushed in on them, cutting off access to ports and the rest of the country, leaving them landlocked with the intention of starving them to submission. Well, as the war dragged on, the Biafra nation had shrunk to a tenth of its original size. The generals and leaders had to change up tactics and move from a military war to a propaganda war in order to draw sympathy from the international community. They spread images of starving Igbo children and wounded citizens in various media, posting headlines that really drew the world to their situation. To be fair, the nation, which was on the brink of collapse, faced a challenge of support. Nigeria had support from major powers. Meanwhile, Biafra had support from Israel and France, who supplied weapons. A few African countries like Tanzania, Gabon, and Ivory Coast formally recognized Biafra as a legitimate nation. But that was it. However, thanks to the propaganda, sympathetic agencies airlifted aid to the landlocked nation. But even with the aid from the international community and weapons from France, the Biafran army couldn't match Nigeria's federal army. And after 2.5 years, they had surrendered to Nigerian authorities under the leadership of Vice President, who was then Major General Philip Effiong. As their president, General Ojukwu, had fled to the neighboring Ivory Coast in exile, bringing the war that had claimed approximately 3 million lives to an official end on January 15, 1970. So, having said all this, we get an understanding of some of the factors that led to the war and how it was fought. So you might ask, what happened next? Well, when Nigeria's head of state, General Yakubu Gowon, accepted Biafra's surrender, he told the nation to accept the secessionists as their brothers, proclaiming that there was no victor, no vanquished in the war. A ploy that seems to sweep the 30-month-long event under the rug. Also, the underlying factors that led to the war have still not been addressed, even 50 years later. And January 15th is now celebrated as Armed Forces Remembrance Day. To Nigeria, Biafra never happened. Finally, the consequences of the failed secession were felt years after the surrender. When members of the Igbo tribe returned to their lands in other parts of the country, they were unable to reclaim their properties and livelihood. The Nigerian government then gave every Igbo person who had an account in Nigeria prior to the war just £20 to restart their lives. It is said that up to this day, the federal government has a level of negative bias in regards to resource distribution and development of the former Biafra region. Care to share your thoughts about this episode? Leave a review or your suggestions on our platform or on iTunes. Join me on the next episode of Long Story Short on Jamit FM. I have been your host, Liwa.
Long Story Short was produced by Liwa and Aiko Rizu. This episode was edited, mixed and mastered by Aiko Rizu. Long Story Short is a production of Jamit Media.